You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, with less than a month to go in the presidential election, we find out what's on the minds of one prized voting group, undecided voters.
Right now, the countdown continues 19 days away from Election Day. Tonight, the two main party presidential candidates, Republican Donald Trump, Democrat Hillary Clinton, will debate one final time.
But where are the candidates in the polls, and how could the debate change things? And then how are things looking in the race for the U.S. Senate?
Joining us now, as he does every week, to try to answer that kind of question is Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst at 538. Harry, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back. Only 20 days to go. Oh, thank God.
The clock is ticking. Yeah, Harry, and 20 days out, what do the polls look like nationally and key battleground states?
I mean, if we're talking about the presidential race, it's very clear that Hillary Clinton continues to lead that by a wide margin. Our national estimate has her up by about 7 percentage points. And then if you go swing state by swing state, she's pretty much leading in all of them. She has small leads in, say, a state like Ohio, but she has very large leads in states like Colorado and Virginia. And when you put it all together, she looks like she's, at this point, if the polls are correct, heading for at least 330 electoral votes, if not 350. And, of course, you only need 270 to win.
Last debate tonight, you wrote pretty recently about the impact of third debates. We don't have a huge sample to draw from here, but looking at recent history, what do you see?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, we only have six prior debates to go from. But if you look at those, the average debate has only shifted things by maybe a point and a half. That, of course, is not anywhere close to the lead that Hillary Clinton has right now. There was one debate in 1992 that shifted things more significantly, but there was a third-party candidate or an independent candidate in Ross Perot, and we obviously don't have that this time around. It's just going to be Trump and Clinton. So I just don't really see, unless something crazy happens, and this year has been crazy, this debate being a game changer.
Yeah, so even if Donald Trump comes out of this debate the consensus winner, the benefit, the likely gain from that is not enough to bridge that gap, it sounds like.
Exactly right. I mean, third debates, historically speaking, have had less impact than either the first or the second, which makes sense because usually fewer people tune into the third debate. And by this point, voters know what's going on. They've seen these two candidates debate twice before, so it shouldn't be too surprising that a third debate, at least historically speaking, has had far less of an impact than either one or two.
Right. Are we close enough to the election now that, you know, the undecided voters, the numbers are getting smaller? People are pretty much, if they've made up their minds, they're going to stay with what they've got, barring I don't know what. We're pretty much locked in as voters at this point.
Usually the answer is yes. Now, obviously, you could potentially point to something like 1948, where maybe that wasn't the case. But even in that year with Dewey defeating Truman, but in fact, it was Truman defeating Dewey. Even in that year, the polling error was not anywhere near what we would need right now for Donald Trump to be able to come back on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you wrote about that Dewey-Truman election. There's the famous headline, Dewey beats Truman. It's the other way around. Or as the Onion headline said, what's-his-face defeats the other guy, something like that. And I guess you're hearing from people saying, hey, what about Dewey-Truman? Maybe that's Trump-Clinton this time around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the, not surprisingly, the thing that candidates who are always losing or the fans of candidates that are always losing like to point to. Oh, all the polls had Dewey winning, but Truman won in the end, and we're hearing that a little bit this year. I know I had a few emails earlier in my inbox earlier this week, but the fact is that is somewhat of a myth. If you look at the polls where they were right now, although Truman was behind Thomas Dewey, it was only about a 3.5-point deficit. Donald Trump's deficit right now is double that. So he's going to need a lot more than that type of error to be able to come back and win this election.
And polling, it sounds like, was a lot fewer and further between in 1948 than it is now.
Yeah, I mean, look, there were only four pollsters that were active in the month of October of 1948. Right now, I think there were five polls that came out between noon and 1 o'clock Eastern time today. So, there's just a lot more numbers to crunch these days. There are a lot more polls. The polling techniques are different now. You know, you call people on the phone. You randomly select participants. Back then, it was basically, oh, I just need X number of African Americans or X number of females, and I'm just going to go and find the first five females that I see. Very different now. Just don't, that type of error could happen, but the techniques are so different that it probably won't.
Another critique it sounds like you're hearing is, oh, but what about Brexit over in the UK? The Brexit polls were saying that Remain in the EU was going to win. You say not really, though.
Not really. This is a great case where conventional wisdom, in fact, kind of sort of shadowed what the polls were actually saying. The betting markets all had remain winning. But if you look at the polls during the month of June, and remember Brexit, the Brexit vote was held, I believe, on June 23rd. If you look at the polls taken during the month of June, 17 of the polls had leave winning versus only 14 that had remain winning. It was just that a lot of people couldn't believe it could possibly happen. And so it was a case where they were ignoring the polls. And I think the lesson from that isn't to ignore the polls, it's to believe the polls. And that's what we're doing right now with this race. And that says Hillary Clinton's well ahead of Donald Trump.
Let's talk about some recent things that might be affecting polls. There was the Trump Access Hollywood video, a handful of women saying the things he said he did in that video, he did to me. Can we measure our polls specific enough to say, hey, yeah, that is hurting Trump in the polls?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not helping Trump in the polls. What we've basically seen is a continuous upswing for Hillary Clinton since the first debate. I think it's very clear that that first debate helped her in any number of ways. I think it shifted voters, but it also made Democrats more likely to turn out. And, of course, that's the name of the game. It doesn't matter if you have support. If they don't turn out, it doesn't mean anything. I think the other things that you mentioned certainly did not help Donald Trump. There's some question as to whether it really hurt him. But if you look at the polls, for instance, the Quinnipiac poll that came out today showed that the majority of voters believed the women who said that Trump committed sexual assault against them. They do not believe Donald Trump.
And on Hillary Clinton's side, we've seen a steady stream of these WikiLeaks hacked emails from Democratic insiders, campaign staff for Hillary Clinton. Is that the sort of thing you would anticipate would hurt her, raise her negatives, turn people away from her, discourage potential supporters?
Well, I mean, if the other candidate wasn't someone who threatened to arrest the other candidate on stage during a debate, then, yeah, that type of thing would probably hurt her. But the fact is that there's all the attention is on Donald Trump. If you look, for instance, at Gallup's polling, right, you see that more people have said consistently that they have seen Donald Trump's name in the news than Hillary Clinton's. And given how unpopular Donald Trump is, he is basically overshadowing any of the negative news coming out against Clinton, and it's basically killing his candidacy.
And then Donald Trump on the campaign trail here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and in speeches around the country has been raising this idea that the election would be rigged. Part of that, he says, is the media colluding with the Clinton campaign, but he has specifically said rigged at polling places. What would, and there's been a lot of experts have weighed in on this, what would it take to successfully sway an election by rigging the voting at polling places?
I have to admit, Donald Trump has said many things during this campaign that were untrue, but this is probably, and I speak as someone who, if I ever to take a job in government, I'd love to be an election official, rings the most untrue, because we have 50 statewide elections. We have, under those 50 statewide elections, there are county boards that control everything. And more than that, more than 270 electoral votes in states that contain more than 270 electoral votes, they're controlled by Republican secretaries of state. What are they, in on the rigging too? It makes no sense. This is just somebody who is upset that he's losing, and it's a completely garbage and baseless claim.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com with the latest news from the campaign trail. Let's step away from the presidential campaign for a minute, Harry. We'll come back to it, I promise. The Senate. People are wondering, you know, Democrats are trying to take the Senate back from Republicans. They need some seats to do that. This growing gap, apparently, between Clinton and Trump should, in theory, be helping Democratic Senate candidates. Is it?
The picture is mixed. If you asked me a week ago, I'd say it wasn't, but we are seeing some movement towards some Democratic candidates in some swing states. Two that I'm specifically looking at that are very interesting to me are actually not states that are swing states on the presidential level, but they are in the Senate races. That is Indiana and Missouri. Indiana, of course, Evan Bayh is running to reclaim his old seat in that state. And then in Missouri, the incumbent Roy Blunt is facing off against the Republican incumbent Roy Blunt is facing off against Jason Kander, the Secretary of State. And it does seem in both of those states there has been some movement towards the Democratic Party. And that's very big because, remember, Democrats need a net gain of 4 if Hillary Clinton wins. And it looks like right now they're probably going to get it. I can't tell you the exact states, but the movement in the polls in those two states, plus in the state of Nevada, where Harry Reid's seat is up, he's obviously retiring. The movement there towards the Democratic candidate, three states, very good news for Democrats.
What are you looking at here in Wisconsin in the Johnson-Feingold race? We've had their two debates now. That's their second and final one just last night. Marquette poll, the one that's been pretty consistent every few weeks, showed a tightening race with Feingold just a 2-point lead. A couple other polls have come out since then. What do you make of the Wisconsin U.S. Senate race?
Well, I would say that, you know, obviously Russ Feingold has held a very consistent lead pretty much throughout that race. I think there was only one poll that had Russ Feingold behind. That was that Loras College poll a few weeks ago. The Marquette poll obviously showed some tightening, but there have been some polls released since the Marquette poll came out. One of them was the Monmouth poll that came out earlier today, and it showed that Russ Feingold had a near 10-point lead, I believe it was 8 percentage points. So to me, that's a race that Democrats will almost certainly pick up. Johnson has closed the gap, but I think it's probably a little bit too late for him.
All right, I want to turn to Utah and the candidate who could be the next leader of the free world, Evan McMullen, independent candidate, unhappy, considers himself a conservative Republican, unhappy with the Donald Trump candidacy he's running. What's he doing in the polls?
I think that this is probably the most interesting sort of subplot of this election. You know, you mentioned, and Utah is a state that Donald Trump did horribly in the primary season. The caucus, I think he got something like 14% of the vote. He came in third place. Mormon voters hate Donald Trump. They're obviously, they make up the majority of the voters in the state of Utah. And for the first time ever, we had a poll today that had Evan McMullen leading in the state of Utah in a three-way race with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And it seems to me that he has a decent shot of winning that state, and that would be 6 electoral votes for Evan McMullen, the first third-party candidate to win a state since 1968, and the first third-party candidate to win a state outside of the Deep South since 1924, when, of course, the state that was won by the independent candidate was the state of Wisconsin.
And Evan McMullen, there is a sequence of events that could lead to, if he won Utah and had those 6 electoral votes in his pocket, there's a sequence of events that could lead to him being president. If, right, neither Clinton nor Trump can lock down that majority, if it's tight, they're both in the 260-something range, McMullen gets the rest, then it goes to the House of Representatives.
Right. You get to the House of Representatives, you need to be one of the 3 top electoral vote-getters. McMullen would be number 3 in that particular instance. And then it would be a situation where the House, where each state casts 1 vote, and it's possible that McMullen could be the compromise candidate between Trump and Clinton and could somehow win. Will it happen? Almost certainly not. But then again, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would say no chance that Trump would be the Republican nominee. So we'll see.
You're not emptying out the bank account and putting it on President McMullen getting inaugurated in January.
I'm not. Maybe I'm emptying out my bank account, but for other reasons besides that. But we won't get into that.
That seems reasonable. Now, you had a chat at 5:38 looking at Hillary Clinton's lead in the polls, what she's looking at in the Electoral College. You had a little debate. Should she concentrate on the closer states that she needs to win, or should she try to expand her electoral map? Because states like Texas are close. There are states that should be in the bag for Republicans usually that might be up for grabs. Sum up some of the talking points there.
Well, I think it's essentially what Hillary Clinton's trying to do. If she thinks that she has this election in the bag, then obviously she should try and expand her sort of mandate, right? The bigger she wins by, theoretically, you'd think she'd have more of a mandate to govern. More than that, she could help out some down-ballot Democrats. And, you know, if she does well in the state, we obviously have seen an increasingly strong relationship between how the presidential candidates does and then how they do in Congress and perhaps even the state houses. So that would be an argument for expanding and going full in. However, you don't get really extra points at the end of the day for getting more than 270 electoral votes. The most important thing that Hillary Clinton needs to do at this particular time is win the election. And if she wants to win the election, then she needs to concentrate on the closest states. So it's this back and forth of basically what do you want to do. But I think Clinton's at the point right now that she's leading by so much that it probably is worth her time to invest in some of these pinkish states, perhaps not Texas, but states like Arizona and Georgia, which have been Trump-leaning but still very close.
Let's talk about the coattail effect a little more. Both, we've mentioned this a bunch of times, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have very high negatives for a presidential candidate. Do you think there are a lot of candidates, Senate, Congress, House out there, who don't want that? They're actually more popular than the presidential candidate. They'd actually be a drag if they were seen together.
Well, I think it's certainly the case for the Republican nominees that they really want very little to do with Donald Trump. You know, you saw obviously Kelly Ayotte a few weeks ago, who's the Republican senator from New Hampshire, struggling to, you know, answer a question of whether Donald Trump should be looked up to by children as a role model. So she wants no part of that. We've seen in Nevada, for instance, Joe Heck, who's running for Harry Reid's seat, the Republican out there, very worried about being tied to Trump, and he doesn't quite know which way to do it because he doesn't want to alienate the Trump voters on the right, but at the same time, he doesn't want to alienate those voters in the center. So I think for Republicans, it's a much different thing where they're very worried about being tied to Trump. For Clinton, I think that Democrats realize, especially in a state, say, like North Carolina, where turnout is everything, that they want the strongest vote possible for Hillary Clinton. And so Deborah Ross is very much hoping that she gets some coattails from Clinton because Clinton's likely to carry the state. And if Ross gets the same voters as Clinton, then she's going to be on her way to the United States Senate.
And finally, Harry, the U.S. House, when we came into this election, people thought, oh, maybe Democrats have a shot at the Senate, the House, no way. It seems like they're saying maybe a way, maybe there's a path to Democrats controlling the House as we wrap up, is there?
Maybe. Better shot than it was 12 months ago, but still not very much of a shot. They'll probably almost certainly pick up some seats upwards of 20, but they need much closer to 30 to be able to pull it off. That probably isn't going to happen, which means Paul Ryan will probably still be the Speaker of the House come January.
More likely than an Evan McMullen presidency, but still not very likely.
I think that that is exactly the way that I would put it.
Harry, thanks as always.
Thank you.
That's Harry Enten. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. He joined us to talk about the latest in national politics and the race for the White House.
Coming up after the news, we'll look at the psychology of undecided voters in 2016. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.